You're listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's Live Talk. I'm your host, Keith Martin. Today, we will be speaking with Danny K. Davis, representative for the 7th Congressional District of Illinois. Earlier this month, Congressman Davis was elected to his fourth term on Capitol Hill, where he currently sits on the Committee on Government Reform and the Committee on Small Business. His initiative to quadruple access to jobs funding in the 105th Congress and his Community Renewal Act in the 106th Congress, designed to bring investment and jobs to economically impacted communities, are just two examples of Congressman Davis's successes as a legislator. Before seeking public office, Davis was an educator, community organizer, health planner and administrator, and civil rights advocate. He has received hundreds of awards and citations in the areas of health, education, human relations, politics, and advocacy. Today, Congressman Davis will discuss the Public Safety Ex-Offender Self-Sufficiency Act of 2002, legislation he introduced this February that looks to aid offenders re-entering the community. Welcome to today's Live Talk, Congressman Davis.
Well, thank you very much, and it's a real pleasure for me to be here.
It's a pleasure for us to have you. Thank you, sir. Now, first, let's tell our audience how this act was born. What motivated the creation of this act, and why is legislation like this needed, especially today?
Well, you know, I'm from Chicago, and I represent a very diverse district. We often say it's the most diverse district in the nation. In my district are many of the wealthiest people in the state of Illinois. I represent all of downtown Chicago, North Lake Shore, the Magnificent Mile, John Hancock District, all of downtown Chicago, the Futures Industry. But I also represent, about 85% of the public housing in Chicago. I represent an inner city area that is part of the area that was burned down during the riots in 1968. Mm-hmm. And so we have high levels of unemployment, large numbers of people who have been institutionalized in terms of being penalized. Mm-hmm. So we have a large population of people in some neighborhoods who've been to prison. We have one community, for example, where more than 50% of all the young adult males between the ages of 18 and 45 have records of having been arrested, been incarcerated. So it's a big problem. And recognizing the problem, although it's a problem for us locally, it's a problem nationally. There are more than 600,000 people being released from prisons and jails each year in the United States of America. There are over 2 million people who are currently incarcerated, which means that even though we're only 5% of the world's population, we are 25% of the world's prison population. So it's a big problem. And because it's a problem, we decided that we needed to do all that we could to help individuals come back into society and lead normal lives without the threat of constantly going back to prison, because the recidivism rate right now is close to about 50%. So those were some of the factors that led to our exploration of the problem, and every time we would look at the problem, housing for ex-offenders is a real issue, because many people come out of prison or out of jail. They have no place to go, no stable environment in which to live, and generally within a 3-year period, they're back in the penitentiary.
Right. Now, with housing is one obstacle you mentioned, facing offenders who are reintegrating into the community, what are maybe some other obstacles that this population is facing, and how does your bill seek to overcome these obstacles?
Well, acceptance by of not hiring individuals who've had felony convictions.
Right.
In the state of Illinois, for example, there are 57 job titles that an ex-offender convicted of a felony cannot hold.
Wow.
You can't be a barber unless you can get a waiver. You can't be a beautician. You can't be a nail technician. You can't work in a school, a hospital, a health center, a doctor's office. And I'm talking about you can't cut the grass at a nursing home.
Hmm.
You can't wash the windows. You can't wash dishes. You can't be a butcher. I mean, there are all kinds of jobs that you can't hold.
Hmm.
So what are you going to do?
Right.
And of course, many individuals do what is expected. They go back to the corners, hollering crack and blow, peels and thrills, and within 3 years, 65% or 67% of them have been rearrested. And about 46-47% are back in the penitentiary.
Wow.
And so if nothing changes it,
mm-hmm.
then it's just a cycle of recidivism where they just kind of go through the cycle again, again, and again, costing the taxpayers enormous sums of money.
Right.
So our bill, the public safety, and the reason we call it public safety, take a person who can't find a job, then the public is at risk. I'm saying, when a person can't find a job, the chances of my house being burglarized increases.
Mm.
The chances of my automobile being stolen. The chances of my being mugged on the street. And so we call it public safety, Ex-Offender Self-Sufficiency Act of 2002. And what it's designed to do is to build 100,000 units of SRO type housing over a 5-year period using a model after the low income tax housing credit act, where currently each state can get credits for low income housing, that is to construct low income housing based upon the number of low-income people in that state.
Mm-hmm.
We would use the number of ex-offenders in a state to allocate housing credits that private developers could then use. We're not talking about grant money.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about private developers using a credit, tax credit, to finance the development of housing. Then we would create what we call a structured living environment so that, one, the ex-offender has a decent place to live. Then built into that environment would be the kind of supportive help that he or she might need.
Right.
If you didn't finish high school, for example, there would be GED classes and education. Or say you don't have a skill, there might be skill training that you could be referred to so that you could learn to repair televisions or to fix cars or to fix microwaves or do whatever your aptitude would give you the opportunity, or computer training,
mm-hmm.
or whatever. Then we'd have counselors there to help you with your drug problem. Say you had a drug abuse problem. Then we've got a drug abuse charge the rest of us for taking care of them.
That's fantastic. That's great. If you're just joining us, we are talking to Congressman Danny K. Davis, who represents the 7th District in Illinois, and we're discussing, as he said earlier, the Public Safety Ex-Offender Self-Sufficiency Act of 2002. Now, Congressman, you mentioned the aspect of public safety. Obviously, in the name of the legislation and in the goal of achieving public safety, does that come across to either your constituents in Illinois or the public when they look at the name of the bill and they say, well, this helps offenders, but do they realize that's also aiding them as citizens and as you said, taxpayers?
When you explain it,
mm-hmm.
and people kind of get into it, lots of people at first think that you're just trying to do something to help ex-offenders, you know, to help these criminals
yeah.
who have violated the law and need to be punished.
Mm.
And what we try and help people understand is that when you punish the individuals that way, not only are you punishing them, but you're also punishing yourself.
Mm.
I'm saying,
yeah.
part of the thinking come from my own experiences. I mean, I've worked in low-income communities all of my adult life. And so I've had lots of offices for whatever I was doing, you know, on the street corner, small offices. I have lost so many typewriters and tape recorders and cameras. I mean, if I could regain the stuff I've lost that was stolen, I could probably resign from Congress, you know, and just... So, if I help them, I'm really protecting myself. Now, people will hear me say that.
Yeah.
And I'm stretching it perhaps just a little bit. But I guarantee you I've lost at least 25 typewriters over the course of my public, you know, where people break in the office.
Definitely.
And steal a typewriter.
Oh.
I mean, or they break in, steal a radio. Tape recorder. I've had people come back to try and sell me things that someone stole. You know, they come in and say, you want to buy a camera? Say, look here, here's a good... I said, yeah, it is good.
You already know how to use it, that's great.
It was good the last time I used it. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff. And so it makes a lot of good sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fortunately, we're beginning to look at this. Now, the Justice Department, just about 3 months ago,
mm-hmm.
released $100 million in grants to 65 grantees across the country to try and help ex-offenders
mm-hmm.
learn how to come back. These were usually $2 million grants. The biggest ones were $2 million. For example, the one in the community where I'm located now was $2 million to work with 200 hardcore ex-offenders to try and get them equipped to take care of themselves, to lead. And there are so many things that need to happen.
Right.
I mean, like some people are alienated from their families. And so counseling to help the family, you know, give the person a break if you can. And we don't try to force anything upon a family because we know that families in many instances have gone through some real travail trying to deal with the family member who may have been a drug addict, who stole everything out of the house that wasn't nailed down. Who, you know, where other members of the family couldn't put their belongings. And most of these are individuals who've been arrested and convicted of drug possession or distribution. I'm saying that's the bulk of the individuals that we run into. And some of them maybe had one possession. Where they were in the car with somebody
mm-hmm.
who had more of a controlled substance given the unemployment situation right now, where almost any employer can find whatever they're looking for. You know, I mean, unless there's some effort, why would you hire somebody that's got a history of problems when you can hire somebody that don't seem to have that monkey on their back?
Right. When they have that label as ex-offender, it doesn't, you know, the crime can be irrelevant. Just that label of ex-offender can push people right back out the door.
And yet, if we don't do something for them, we know what the result is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying no matter how difficult it is to reclaim them, the price of not reclaiming them is much greater.
That's a very good point. Now, you have gotten support for the legislation from organizations both in and out of the criminal justice system. Can you give us an idea of what organizations are supporting the bill and how they'll play a role?
Well, many of the major civil rights groups, you know, like the Urban League, the NAACP, groups like the ACLU, and of course, TASC, I mean, the National Association of Blacks in Criminal Justice, almost Volunteers of America, groups that deal the whole social service community just about is in support. I'm saying people who actually deal with these problems have a tendency to recognize the needs a little more than those who don't.
Mm.
One of the things, though, that we've got to do is we've got to be able to convince representatives of communities and of people where they don't have as much of a problem. I'm saying, for example, there are some states that don't have the same problem as, say, Illinois, or New York, or California, or Ohio. There are some parts of states that don't have the same problem as big urban inner city communities. And there are lots of reasons for all of that. You know what I'm saying? Most new jobs that are created in suburban areas. If a bunch of ex-offenders live in a place like Chicago, where there is a shortage of jobs already, then this further decreases the likelihood of their ability to get a job unless there is some help for them. And so we hope. Now, we're meeting with everybody. We've met with the Chambers of Commerce. We're meeting with civic and community groups. We're meeting with churches. And some church groups are beginning to take on the reclamation of ex-offenders as a kind of ministry. I'm saying, almost, you go to any inner city church, and there are several members who have people in their families who are ex-offenders. And we're trying to get them to understand that if the church really loves Miss Jones, and even if you don't love the ex-offender, but if you love Miss Jones, you know, Mother Jones has been on the mother's bench for 50 years and the mother's board. If you want to help her, in addition to praying for her, you might want to help work with her grandson, who is an ex-offender.
Right.
So she won't have to carry that burden alone, where she won't have to try to, you know, let Johnny live in her basement and not have a job, and she'd take part of her Social Security check to try to help keep him going. And when that runs short, then she's worried that Johnny may go and do the same stuff that he's been doing.
Right.
And is going to end up back in the penitentiary. So it's a community issue. It's a community and the message we're trying to take to the public.
Excellent. Well, that is a perfect place to wrap up today's live talk. And again, thank you to Congressman Danny K. Davis of Illinois for joining us today. Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you, and it's been my pleasure.
Excellent. And thank you to our audience as well. Now, for more information on legislation that may impact the field of corrections, be sure to read this week's articles on corrections.com, and make sure you join us in December as corrections.com takes a look at population changes in the field. We'll also take a look back at the news and issues of this year and how they affected the nation's prisons and jails. For CCNN, I'm Keith Martin.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.